Support for this podcast comes from Washington Wise, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington affect your portfolio and your money every day. But what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab. The show unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how they may affect your finances and investments. Listen today at schwab.com/washingtonwise. That's schwab.com/washingtonwise.
From pesos to pounds, euros to yen, Wise can help you manage your money in different currencies. With Wise, you can send money to your cousin in Australia in seconds. Travel internationally without having to brave an airport currency exchange desk or take the guesswork out of converting currencies. Wise lets you send and spend money worldwide at the real-time mid-market exchange rate, all without any hidden fees. Join 60 million customers already using Wise worldwide. To learn more about how a Wise account can work for you, download the app or visit Wise.com. That's Wise, W-I-S-E.com. Wise.com.
Time to talk about Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Yeah, we're going to get
real deep into some TNG episodes.
Get it done at last.
Oh, man. We're speaking in Klingon by the end of this, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
I hope so. Hello, welcome to another episode of The Weeds on the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Matthew Iglesias, here with Jane Costin. Also joined today by special guest Alex Ward from The Worldly Podcast, our defense correspondent here at Vox.com. He's joining us because we are doing a multi-podcast Space Week event. It is the 50th anniversary of the moon landing today. There are additional space-themed episodes coming forth on Primetime and on Future Perfect. This is The Weeds. We talk about policy, mm-hmm. space policy. I've been amused for what I think was the funniest subplot of the Trump era has been that there's going to be a Space Force. And there's Space Force hats. And one of the things about this is that, like, Trump just says stuff all the time, as we've also been discussed here. And what he says, a lot of time has very little to do with policymaking that's actually happening. And so it was several months into the Space Force that I first noticed that the Space Force is actually real.
It is.
That this, like, isn't just something that Donald Trump says. There's, like, real bills. There's, like, a Defense Department. There's, like, this vast maw of defense bureaucracy. And, like, they are actually working on this.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, I think it will be a thing. Like, it's not just that they're working on it. There will be a Space Force.
Right.
Like, it will exist. I think it's worth taking just a quick step back to say, like, although Trump does say things, this has been a long-term proposal, right? So, in fact, I think he said something that he heard and was like, that just sounds cool.
Right.
And went forward with it.
No, and that's an important distinction because sometimes Trump says stuff that's disconnected from policy and then people scramble to backfill. But this is the opposite of that, right? This is like there had been machinations to get the American military more involved in space moving forward for years. Trump heard something about it and decided it was cool to talk about.
I also think it's worth noting that when I hear Space Force, I immediately think, okay, it's finally time to take down Bajor because it's been causing too much problems because I watch Deep Space Nine. But this is actually about, like, U.S. satellites being at risk. This is about hypersonic technologies. This is about, like, when we're talking about space, this is not just, like, way out space. This is also the space that's directly above our heads. And I know that that sounds very rote, but it's helpful to think of this in actual brass tacks, concrete terms about, like, when we're talking about space, we are talking about actual space.
So, I mean, yeah, right. Yeah. So what, Alex, what is this? What's going on here?
Sure. So really, since the 90s, there's been a belief that dealing with space has just been across the board bad. And the reason is it has just been distributed in multiple places. There's an Air Force Space Command, but the Army and Navy have some space equities. There's a different sort of acquisition office. There are different commanders that think about space. It's also in Strategic Command, another unified command. So the theory of the case with the Space Force is we need to have a home body, its own separate military force, which would be our sixth branch, to just focus solely on operations in space. And what they would do is mainly protect the satellites and GPS things, as Jane rightly pointed out, that are floating above our heads, right? So when you use a GPS in your car to get from A to B, you're relying on space. When you swipe right on Tinder, you're relying on space, right? So so for the U.S., it's very important for us to maintain and protect these civilian assets and including the military assets we have in space. A lot of our missile systems rely on that.
Let's explain some military bureaucracy, because we don't normally talk about this stuff in the weeds, right?
What?
And I don't know that I understand exactly. But it looks to me, there's like two different ways that the military kind of slices up the pie. One is there's these different branches. So it's like there's the Army, there's the Navy, there's the Air Force. But then the other is that there's this like geography,
right,
where there's a Central Command and Africa Command. And they kind of, I don't know what the term is, right? But they're both. So like a given military asset will be both part of one of the branches of the military, but also part of one of these joint commands.
Yeah, and that has always been a redundancy in the Pentagon. So just to maybe go even a step right back. So as Matt rightly pointed out, there are branches, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, there's Coast Guard, and soon to be Space Force or Space Corps. And we'll get to the distinction in a second because they can't even agree on the name yet. And then you have regional and functional commands. So regional commands being Central Command, Middle East, EUCOM, Europe, Indo-PACOM now,
AFRICOM.
Asia, AFRICOM, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then on top of that, you also have, like, Special Operations Command, et cetera.
Right. So space just kind of feels like geography.
Exactly. It would be one of those geographical ones. But I think it's important to know two distinctions. It will be a space command,
uh-huh,
and there will be a space force. So the way to think about this is imagine the space force being, like, the Army, and
right,
space command being, like, CENTCOM, right, Central Command, just for a reason. So there will be a multitude of branches of services working within Space Command.
Okay.
Not just Space Force. But there will also be a Space Force, which is its own thing. And so these guys, whenever it's built and set up, are supposed to focus solely on, again, protecting these assets in space. And the reason why this is so urgent in the mind of the Pentagon is, and in fact in the Trump administration, is that Russia and China have made great strides in space and they're worried about, I think as the Pentagon calls it, it's a congested, contested, and competitive domain, blah, blah, blah.
So my question is, so the last new branch of the military was the Air Force, which was established in 1947,
Woo.
Which I think to a lot of people seems kind of surprising that it would have been established after World War II, but it basically was established because World War II was like, hey, it turns out planes can do a lot of things. You know, you take a couple of B-17s over Europe and interesting things can happen.
Air power is good.
It's true. So what can we learn from the previous establishment of a new branch that will tell us about Space Force? Because I just asked you, like, will there be a Space Force Academy? In real terms, how do you set up a new branch of the military?
Yeah. So let's first start with the ideology. The reason there was an Air Force is because you had military planners go like, hey, we have people focused solely on water, Navy. People focus solely on land, Marines, and Army, more Army than Marines. And the reason we need an Air Force is, even though these branches do think about planes and they do have warplanes, we
right
need people focus solely on air power, right?
Right.
So that's why there's an Air Force.
Because obviously we had a lot of airplanes in
exactly
World War II.
And to this day, we still have Navy pilots. We still have Army pilots, right? But there is an Air Force focused solely on the air. Now the belief is that we need a Space Force to focus solely on space, even though, again, we talked about there are multiple equities throughout the military. Okay, so now what do we learn? So now that we've established that we need to defend space, now we need to actually incentivize people to join a Space Force, right? We have to maybe incentivize people to leave Army, Navy, Marines, et cetera, and go,
right,
do you want to completely throw your career in limbo and join a Space Force? Come on in. We will need to develop doctrines and bureaucracy. And so doctrines meaning like, what do we do? What are our main priorities? Who is our leadership? Who do they get to advise? How important are they? And they've made some pretty good strides on that. Do we need an academy? How much training will we need? The Air Force being what it is requires a lot of scientific training and et cetera, et cetera. The Space Force is going to need a lot more than that,
uh-huh,
right? It's going to have to care very deeply about physics, and so you need to develop quite a pipeline. You'll also need to reorganize the DoD bureaucracy, and that's frankly one of the main critiques of it, which we'll get to, I'm sure, is like the DoD is already just full of organizational boxes. Uh-huh. Why are we adding even more to the Pentagon when there are already people working on space? You'll need to develop the Space Command. And where are you going to put that? Are you going to put it in California? Are you going to put it in Colorado, et cetera? And what are you going to do with the already existing space equities? Are you just going to fold them in to a space force? And how do you do that? So a lot of this was relatively, and I say that in quotation marks when it came to the Air Force, because there was a genuine sort of national desire to say that we needed that. And it was, and they just kind of, I mean, there were difficulties, of course.
Right.
But there, it was somewhat easier to do in 1947 than it is to do now. And on top of that, just American dominance in the air by 1947 was very well established, as opposed to, well, you do have dominance in space, but it's actually, the gap is a lot narrower.
So I have a four-year-old. I live in Washington, D.C. I've been to the Air and Space Museum many times. And you see there, like, the original NASA guys, they were, like, all former military pilots.
Right.
And the space program arose very much in a Cold War context, right? I mean, they didn't, like, fight a battle on the moon, but it was about geopolitical competition with the Soviet Union, and it was using a lot of ex-military personnel. So why wasn't that the Space Force? What's the sort of history of not having a Space Force?
Part of it is just the technological advancements. We just didn't have as much stuff up there as we do now. And really, actually, what I think is the main issue here is that the Space Force is really going to be like a cybersecurity protection force, right? They're just going to be there making sure that all our satellites and our GPSs and whatnot are not getting hacked. Uh-huh. Like, and so we didn't have those abilities before.
The visible disappointment on your face. When I'm just like, oh, this isn't.
Right.
No.
I mean, it's, the thing is that I think there's the greatest gap ever between what people hope Space Force to be and what it actually is. Like, I mean,
so it's more like computer satellite force.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there is a big worry that the first moves in like World War III are that Russia and China, and now my hat's eyes light up, is that Russia, China, who you could expect probably, I mean, if there's going to be World War III, it's Russia and China or somebody, basically try to take out American military assets in space or hack the crap out of all of our stuff up there, right? Uh-huh. And so that's sort of move one. And the reason that matters is, one, it pisses off the population, right? You can't get to where you want to go, but mostly for the military because it relies heavily on space, right? Their own satellites, their own communications. Heck, missiles dropping, a lot of that relies on space. And so the reason it was not militarized at the time was sort of one, I think most importantly, just we have more technology now and uh-huh. others have caught up. And the other is there was a genuine feeling that it was about space exploration. And even though there was sort of competition, it was we don't want to lose in science. Now it's we don't want to lose in the militarization of space.
Right. And so we're talking the sort of hard assets that are already in space,
right.
Basically, right? That without having a super deliberate policy about it, the military, like everybody, it's not just the military, relies on communication satellites and relies on GPS to like get where they're going. And it's become a point of military vulnerability, potentially.
The thing that I'm interested in is a lot of the work that Space Force would be doing on cybersecurity is already being done. And I'm aware that duplication has never stopped the Department of Defense from doing anything.
Right.
But how would Space Force differentiate itself from the work being done on protecting satellites that the military has already been doing? You know, this is something, granted, a lot of my knowledge of this comes from Steven Seagal movies, but like this appears to be a concern that's been around for a long time. It's something the military has been thinking about is how to protect these satellites.
Yeah, what's changed?
Yeah, and to be fair, I think Trump's thinking about this comes from Steven Seagal movies too. So
Under Siege is pretty solid.
It's pretty great. So in terms of the substance, nothing is really going to change. The issue here is that just like why did they establish an Air Force? It's about focus. So the critique is that the Air Force has to focus on cybersecurity, air dominance, and space, among many other things. And that causes a lot of problems. And I mentioned the Air Force specifically because they're the ones that have Air Force Space Command. So they have the most equities when it comes to space as of right now. Strategic Command to a certain extent and the other branches as we discussed. And so the critique is they just can't focus on space enough. On top of that, airmen, as they come up, aren't really space-focused, right? They're focused on flying planes and they're focused on air dominance. So it's not about Space Force will do new and exciting things. It is about making sure that there is a service that focuses specifically on the main things of protecting space and also acquiring the necessary capabilities and creating a culture of space war experts. This is really about getting ahead of an issue, I think, which is space is already kind of militarized. They're worried it's going to get even more militarized. And so let's have a professional service that is capable of defending anything that we need, especially if things get bad.
So when we talk about focus, right, it feels to me when you talk about sort of government organization, a lot of this always has to do with career trajectories, right? And so institutions, you know, they get big, they do more than one thing, but there's usually something that is considered like the core and like, if you want to get ahead, like most of the leadership in the organization will have come up through doing like one kind of thing, right? And then something else becomes non-core, right? It's not your focus. It's not what you do, and it's not where the prestige is. And then that can become a big issue, right? So like this is the thing for the Air Force, right? Which is acquired. Like one thing they do, right, is just like airlift, right? They like move people from place to place.
Sure.
But that's not like the cool thing to do in the Air Force, right? Like what Air Force people identify with as like their strongest mission is being fighter pilots.
Yes. In the Marines, it's being an infantryman, right? And actually in the Army too. In the Navy, it's kind of like being a destroyer captain.
right. So there's like something that's like in your head, right? And there's something that like the top guys usually came out of this background. And that's like not cybersecurity in outer space. So if you create a new force, the idea is you create a thing where, like, the people who are in there, they feel valued.
Right. In every service, there's somebody who does logistics. There's somebody who does accounting. They're not going to become a four-star.
Right.
Because that's not the core in equity and mission of the service. Right now, we do not really have people who do the core equity of what's supposed to be the Space Force, except those in Air Force Space Command, which is why the already confirmed, and we do have a Space Commander, is General John Raymond.
Can I just say that Space Commander is the greatest title I've ever heard?
It's pretty good.
I don't need to know anything else.
I mean, I think Supreme Allied Commander is pretty great.
It's true.
But Space Commander is pretty good. So General John Raymond, he's been confirmed. He exists. And the reason he got it is because, again, he was leading Air Force Base Command, and right, he's sort of the guy with that knowledge. Going forward, there are hopes that there will be new John Raymonds coming up through the ranks, and who knows from where. To Jane's earlier great question, will there be a Space Force Academy? I don't know. I'd join if I were young. Like, that
right,
sounds cool. But I think it does make sense to create at least a culture, as you rightly say, Matt, like to have these kinds of people. The hope was that this could have been done in the Air Force as it was. And the reason this proposal keeps coming up is because they feel like, no, the space competencies keep getting subordinated to flying fighter jets.
Right. So you were showing me like a grid of different proposals, right? So that's my next question. It's like, so what's in the mix, right? It seems like there's some kind of consensus in defense-y circles that they want to create something like this. But then what are they disagreeing about?
So
the name.
Well, yeah, the name most importantly is the most glaring. In one of them, basically, right now there's a difference between calling it the Space Force and the Space Corps. So they need to figure that out first.
is that tied to something? You know, sometimes these naming disputes are just about names, but is there like a lurking? Because there's a Marine Corps and there's an Air Force.
So everyone agrees that the Space Force, whatever, is going to be a part of the Air Force, like bureaucracy. In the way that the Marines are part of are under the Secretary of the Navy, right? The Secretary of the Air Force will oversee the Air Force and the Space Force. But those that are saying we need a Space Corps is to kind of signal that, like, it's its own service, but it's under something else.
Okay.
That's kind of how they see it, but it's semantics and, frankly, stupid. They just need to figure that out. A lot of it really has to do with civilian positions. Should we have an undersecretary of defense for space? Should we elevate like the deputy assistant secretary of defense for space? A lot of this has to do with where do we move the bureaucratic needles around? How much money should it get, right? We've seen leaked proposals from the Air Force that setting this up will cost up to $13 billion. You've got other people being like, no, it's going to be $2 to $3 billion. They agree that there'll be a commander at the four-star level of it. We already know that with John Raymond. And then actually the another thing that is interesting, and I think this will actually be one of the harder things to do, is like, will there be a Space Force National Guard?
Right? Okay.
Will there be civilians who, you know, go to work and then 2 weeks in the summer do Space Force stuff?
Yeah, that's my question, because I'm just like, I'm sure that all of this happened with the establishment of the Air Force. However, I think with the Air Force, there very much was a sense of like, we already have all of these people who have experience flying these planes. So setting up a separate branch in which you want to fly these planes, you want to be involved in the flying of planes, you want to help develop the B-2 or something like that, that's available. Even just basic things like, how do you recruit for Space Force? Because I think that military recruiting is one of those kind of very funny areas that I think doesn't get quite enough attention, because it's a complicated thing to do. The effectiveness of military recruiting has kind of waned and waxed as over time. But I would be very curious to see, like, what is the recruiting mechanism for a entity that, one, sounds way cooler than it probably actually is, and two, is doing something that we're trying to get out ahead of. The Air Force is answering something that's already happened. The Air Force is like, remember what we did over Dresden? We could do that more. And I think for the people behind Space Force, there's an argument like, well, we're also catching up to something that's already happening. But I'd be interested to see how you make that point to people you're trying to get into it.
Yeah, I know. I think that's a great question. I mean, right now, the main issue is they're trying to convince people in the other services to join the Space Force, right? And upend their current careers to switch. Now, some may see that as a benefit because, they're, you know, it's new and, you know, chaos is a ladder and you might be able to move up in the ranks if that's what your goal is. When it comes to recruiting people who aren't in the military already, I think they're going to go after STEM folks, right? I mean, that would make the most sense to me. But, I mean, this is all new. And then, again, when they can't even agree on the name, like, this is just going to be a lot of growing pains. And recruiting was one of them.
By the way, I've got a question here. You know, in my mind, this was going to be, like, awesome. We were going to have – it was going to be, like, Starfleet or mobile infantry, space marines, you know, guys with like, helmets on. And,
totally.
You know, maybe jetpacks, little – TIE fighters.
Yeah. Bunch of Boba Fetts.
Starships. But so obviously, right, that's military. We've all seen those movies. We've seen those shows. And, you know, they've got ranks, they salute, they have phasers. But if we're actually talking about, like, a bunch of nerds working on cybersecurity, like, why does that have to be a military operation at all? Like, what that sounds to me like the kind of thing that law enforcement and intelligence agencies normally do, like people at desks, like typing away on their computers, like maybe make some phone calls, like, hey, let's check it out, like load up the satellite, right? Like, if we're not talking about people like going into space and fighting, like, why is this the military?
Two reasons. One is because there's a ton of military assets already there, and part of space defense will include like shooting things at things in space. The other reason is, again, the worry about like actual, and the same reason we have a cyber command and right, like there is hacking and fighting in the cyber realm, and so we now need to do that kind of same thing in space. At this moment, I'm sure there are Russians and Chinese and whoever trying to hack into our systems in space, and we have people fending them off. So
just from behind desks.
From behind desks, right? I mean, maybe in the future there will be like a military space station, you know, space base.
Uh-huh.
Okay, sure. Let it be. But right now, it's just people on Earth protecting stuff in space through cyber and with missiles.
There's a treaty, though, right? About like putting weapons in space.
Yes, but this is part of like, you're not supposed to militarize space, but again, you can shoot missiles from Earth to space and knock things down. This is one of our worries about when the Chinese did this. They shot one of their own satellites, and we kind of went, that was a weirdly Sputnik-y moment for us. We were like, ooh, wait a minute, the Chinese can kind of like shoot some satellites down. Okay, that's worrying. The Russians have advanced tremendously, and so again, it's just about the gap narrowing, and we're like, okay, well, we need to protect our stuff here.
Support for The Weeds comes from Not Another Politics Podcast from the Harris School of Public Policy. With the constant news cycle, there's a lot of noise out there. Opinions are plastered all over social media, pundits are throwing out hot takes without any sort of context, and it's only getting worse as we dive farther into election season. We know that if you're listening to us at The Weeds, you're looking to cut through all this And if you like this show, you might like Not Another Politics Podcast. Not Another Politics Podcast is produced by the University of Chicago Harris School of Public Policy. They want to take a research and data approach to analyzing hot button issues and offer perspectives that go beyond the headlines. They cover a wide variety of topics in their episodes, but a few recent episodes that you can listen to include a deep dive into why women are underrepresented in U.S. politics or whether or not we can believe political surveys. You can listen and subscribe today at harris.uchicago.edu/NAP. That's N-A-P-P. Support for The Weeds comes from Mint Mobile. Some might say that sauce is what makes us a proper society. Like, imagine a world without hot sauce, or barbecue sauce, or Worcestershire sauce, or however it's pronounced. It's inconceivable. Well, Mint Mobile agrees, and their secret sauce is that they sell their wireless service totally online. They don't worry at all about retail costs, and they say that lets them pass those savings on to you. It's why their premium wireless plans start at just $15 a month. With Mint Mobile, you could say goodbye to an overpriced monthly phone bill or unexpected fees. All of their plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed 5G data. Signing up is super easy, and you could even bring your own phone and phone number with you to your new plan when you switch. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, you can go to mintmobile.com/weeds. That's mintmobile.com/weeds. You could cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/weeds. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Conceptually, the interesting thing about this is that it's all about Chinese and Russians. We are not talking about the Taliban going into outer space. There's no, like, space CADA.
yeah, there's no global war on space terrorism right now.
Yeah, no, but so this is something that I don't know that people who are, you know, sort of casual consumers of political news are quite attuned to this. But I feel like something that is bubbling up from the depths of the national security realm is a kind of turning of the page on this war on terror era and a focus on, like, great power politics. And this is part of that.
Yes. I mean, I think the Trump administration, rightly, in their doctrine, right, in their writings, or whatever they're worth, are like, you even had Mattis basically say global war on terrorism is still a thing, but it's subordinated to worrying about great powers. It seems like it's Pence's idea, too. Like, Pence is super interested in space. And I'm sure he heard these ideas in the 90s and so, you know, brought it up to the president, as did others. Michael Griffin, who's also at the Pentagon and, like, one of the originators of the Reagan-era space war, Star Wars, is kind of leading this, too.
Right.
So, yes, it is part of great powers. And they keep saying Russia, China, Russia, China. Of course, there are other hackers out there, North Koreans, Iran. But when it comes to space, it's really those two. That said, like, it's been a genuine worry forever.
Right. No, I mean, it's like the concern has always been out there, but there is a shift in, like, whose concerns get sort of listened to over time, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like you could go, right, in 2006, like, there were people in the Pentagon saying all this terrorism is overblown. What we should be doing is building huge, naval ships to fight war with China for control over the South China Seas. But people weren't paying attention to that.
Right.
And you would get dismissed. It's like, well, of course, this Navy guy, like, he wants more money for his surface fleet because that's what Navy people want. But, like, terrorism, like, that's the shit, right? Like, we're talking about Marines, we're talking about JSOC, right? Like, this is what's hot. Counterinsurgency people were everywhere. David Petraeus became this, like, huge, you know, like, mini celebrity with his, like, manuals on how to go to random villages and make nice to people. The Space Force being elevated in this way seems to me like a consequence of, you know, both, like, the world changes, but also, like, fads kind of shift. It's like it's not cool to be into counterinsurgency anymore.
But the thing about it is it may not be cool, but counterinsurgency is still taking place. Like, you know, we're still at Camp Le Menier in Djibouti sending out drones over Yemen to do something. And I'm aware that at a certain point, I'm just going to start sounding like an anti-war libertarian. But I'm just like, the military's doing a lot right now. And this would expand the ability of the military to do more of a lot. So my question is, how much of this is based on real and active threats that clearly are coming up when there are also real and active threats ongoing in, say, Niger or with dealing with Boko Haram or something like that, which is also a big threat for the military? It feels like this would stretch the military's capacity in a way that I'm just a little confused at.
Yeah, it's fair. 2 points. One, the argument that they would make, they being the Pentagon, is, well, we're already doing this space stuff.
Okay.
We're just refocusing and having a service that is just more
doing
attuned,
it better.
Doing it better and more attuned to the. And really, in a lot of people's minds, this is just about acquisition streamlining, right? Because the Air Force is bad at the Air Force is just bad at getting the right space stuff. And on top of that, there are people in the Army and Navy and elsewhere getting space stuff. And so we just need to streamline this space acquisition process and save the taxpayer some money. The other is, and you can always fight this argument, is like, we're America, damn it. And we can, we can fight terrorists on the Arabian Peninsula and in the middle and elsewhere in the Middle East and in Western Africa, and also protect satellites in space. Like, it's not an either or. You're more than within your right to fight that argument, but that's kind of like, of course we can do all this. And now that the Pentagon's roughly getting $750 billion,
plenty.
It's plenty to do this. Yeah.
So if the problem is that the Air Force is bad at this, why are you creating a new thing that's part of the Air Force?
It's not that the Air Force is bad. It's just that it could be better, right?
Mm.
And like, I don't think anyone would say the Air Force has been bad at space and has done horribly and ceded all this territory. The issue just comes down to, again, we just need to do space better.
Yeah.
And like, we've had a space command before, by the way.
Pentagon.
I don't know if you knew that. We've had one before. So like, these kinds of ideas have been percolating in the back of the head. So when Trump was like, I just want one, I think they thought the easiest thing to do was put it under the Air Force. We don't have to create a new branch. Like, it's just right. And so it just made things a lot easier. And again, it's just also because a lot of the equities are there. It made the split kind of easier to do. Last thing is that Mattis was against it originally. And so was Heather Wilson, who used to be the Secretary of the Air Force. They were against having a Space Force.
Uh-huh.
For the main reasons of like, they didn't want to add more bureaucracy and they thought that the Air Force was doing just fine. And then when Trump was like, no, we are getting a Space Force, immediately they were saying, well, we were convinced of it. You can do this. So
it
blah,
turns
blah.
Out big government is fun.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, I know that's not a satisfying reason, but like,
right.
That's the, and frankly, the why I'm sort of speaking in generalities and all over the place is because like, that's where we're at. The idea will exist. We will have a Space Force. We will have a Space Command. We will have all these things. It's just everything is very nebulous at the moment.
And so this gets worked out in Congress?
Yes.
Basically?
Congressional legislation in tandem with the Pentagon. I mean, right now it's part of the NDAA, the yearly must-pass defense authorization bill. At the moment, House and Senate are sort of fighting on what specifics to have, what the name of the thing will be. But this is sort of the real, not the first time space legislation like this has existed, but it's the first real sort of legislative push. Like, okay, we're going to have this thing. We're making moves. We have a space commander. Let's get this thing rolling.
Right. But like, so it would come out of a congressional process.
And right.
Is this like an area where we have like a partisan clash, or is this like nice old-time textbook Congress where people are just, I don't know, working things out as individuals?
It's actually been fairly bipartisan. I know Mike Rogers, Republican Congress from Alabama, and Jim Cooper, Democrat from Tennessee, I believe.
Yeah.
They were behind this for a while. They've got tons of Democrats are on board, tons of Republicans are on board. Where they differ is like, how much should this cost? How much love to Trump should they give? And many specifics. But this is, I don't, like, no person on the Hill that I've talked to has said we shouldn't have
right.
some sort of specialization and greatness in space. This is all about making space great again for America.
Sure. But budget is obviously always important to these things, right? So there's like one vision of this where you would say, okay, we're already doing a bunch of things in space. We have a lot of equities in space. Different people have different things. And we're going to mostly redraw the lines of the box. And then there's another vision of it where you're like, no, we need a huge like infusion of money into like a new space thing that's going to be like triple space, right? Like, so like, I mean, and I assume there's some formula? I mean, there must be some way that these decisions get made, like, within the huge Pentagon budget, right? Like, how much money does the Navy get? How much does the Air Force get, right? And, like, some wrangling. I mean, it's billions of dollars.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm interested to see is, right now, again, the estimates we're seeing is, like, how much it's going to cost to set up this thing, right? To basically take some stuff from other branches, move it. Like, in the future, the Secretary of the Air Force is going to have to develop the Space Force budget, and you're going to have to find a Secretary of the Air Force that really wants to, like, it would seem, take some money out of the Air Force budget and reallocate it. And that's a hard thing to do.
Right. I mean, is that when people say, like, so-and-so wants a 6% increase in defense spending, is there, like, a automaticity into how that allocates across the different
Like, is there
services?
An algorithm?
Yeah.
Not really, no. The main thing to understand when it comes to the military is, like, what was done before? All right, we're going to keep doing that until someone tells us to change.
Right.
So this just comes down to, like, usually just have a certain amount of pay raises for troops. They will know what other space equipment costs, and so they'll factor all that in. Like, not the good thing here is that a lot of this won't be too new in the sense that we're not, to Jane's point earlier, we're not doing things that are, like, out of the ordinary.
Right.
We're not developing and creating new stuff in the sense of, like, new missions in space. They're going to take all of that, and then they're just going to go, okay, here's the budget. But it will be political because— And this is why I actually worry about the Space Force / Corps being under the Air Force is, like, if your entire, as you rightly sort of mentioned earlier, if your entire point was, hey, the Air Force isn't focusing enough, well, you're still giving the Secretary of the Air Force a lot of power here in determining and requesting the kind of budget that you're going to want.
Yeah, well, so that's what I mean. So, like, because the Marines and the Navy have this relationship, right,
yeah,
where the Secretary of the Navy oversees the Marine Corps. There's no separate Marines Academy, right?
No.
They have this kind of stuff, but it's a very different service, right? It's different identity, different mission, a different set of ranks, a different set of, you know, sort of values, right? And that has persisted across time, right? And the top guys in the Navy don't just say, like, well, we're not really interested in riflemen, so we're not going to give them any money, even though, like, in their hearts, right, like, the top admirals in the Navy are, like, they command ships.
Right.
Like, that's their thing, right? And I don't know how that got worked out over time. It's a historical process, right? But it seems like if you're saying, like, either the Air Force commanders, like, do want to commit to space, like, or they don't on some level.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to give into a space culture.
Right.
Right? Like,
yeah, no, I think that when we're talking about the military, for a lot of people, there's been a lot of talk about how military culture is so divorced from kind of what everyday Americans think of. And I think, in my view, that's a very bad thing because it means that we don't adequately understand what the people serving our country are going through. But I also think, like, the concept of the development of space culture, which is something, you know, we have, there's Air Force culture, there's an entire conversation, you know, if you go visit the Naval Academy, they put a lot of focus on, like, Naval Academy culture, because there's a culture of the Navy, a conceit upon which the Navy rests, this idea of what it does and who it is, and people will need to come up with that for Space Force.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to come up with their own, like, shitty jokes, too.
Right.
Like,
it's all bad jokes.
It is. I mean, honestly, like, anytime you talk to anyone in the Navy, they're like, the Naval Obstacle Course is you have hot coffee and a donut and you're trying to walk through the office. Or they'll always make the same stupid joke about the Marines, which is like, yeah, all we do is just give Marines a ride. Like, it's just, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to need that in the Space Force. You're going to need that kind of culture building. And what I'm interested on that is, one, like, how do you sort of divorce it from Air Force culture? How do you, one, create it? But two, it's the, at least for the U.S., the first, like, modern-day new force. And, like, everything we've had before was done in really slow, painstaking times,
right,
where you had tons of time to prepare, tons of times to, like, create a whole bunch of doctrine and setups. And, like, things move really fast today in the world, of course, and in the news cycle. And like, to me, the Space Force is going to be the most— like, just insanely hyper kind of force, because they're just going to grow in a 24-hour news cycle. They're going to grow where they constantly need to deal with threats in space that are happening literally at light speed. That, to me, is going to be an interesting aspect. And I don't know how you work on these, like, keeping China and Russia at bay and also try to, like instill like a Remember the Titans type culture that, that, you know, within the Space Force.
Do the Chinese have a setup like this? Is there like People's Liberation Space Force?
It's not like the PLASF, but they do have like a space unit. The Russians do. France just recently said they're going to have one. It's not like this.
Well, France has it.
Yeah.
Did you see that thing? You know, President Macron he released this weird thing of like a French soldier with
It was a very Green Goblin
like
type
the Boba Fett guy. Yeah, yeah, I tweeted it out. I'm so excited by it.
Yeah.
Like France has Boba Fett. It's really cool.
Yeah, but that ends
poorly
for Boba Fett.
That's what the Space Force should be.
Yeah.
That's what I had in my head originally. Like my first deck when I wrote about Space Force was like troops in space. And then when I learned about it, I was like, oh, that was really misleading and wrong.
But even things like you were talking about like military strategy for space. And in my head, I'm like the Battle of Endor or something like that. Like the concept, like we're going to have to rethink what military strategy even entails, because what are you hearkening back to? You know, military strategy today is like, you know, if you go to West Point or something like that, somebody's talking about like Rommel in North Africa or like, you know, Cauldron War in Eastern Europe or something like that. But like, what are you hearkening back to at Space Force Academy?
Yeah, that's a great point. I guess you're just watching Star Trek. No, I mean, there's Pentagon doctrine on this stuff. I think I mentioned earlier, they keep saying it's contested, congestive, and competitive. And the reason is just we have—
What does that mean?
It just means, like, contested that now it's, you know, it used to be kind of, as we talked earlier, kind of like a civilian safe zone, and now there's a militarization of it. Congested, there's just tons of stuff up there making it really hard, and competitive. Now everyone's sort of fighting for dominance in the area. And so like that is sort of the guiding light, so to speak, right now of the Pentagon. Like that's how they sort of see the area. That's how they hope to like that sort of. So now what do you do about it? And there are space strategies it does exist.
Right.
And of course, the Air Force has it as well. So it's just about, again, I'm trying to make this sound sexier than it is. It's just really not. It's just about reallocating things that we do to a new service.
Ooh,
there's nothing
reallocating
better
resources
than a intense bureaucratic fight.
Support for The Weeds comes from Hydro. So I hit the gym in the mornings, and let me tell you, it's often a battle not to hit that snooze button again. And I'm sure I'm not alone in this. With Hydro, you can squeeze in a fast 20-minute workout. According to them, it'll work 86% of your muscles. Hydro is a state-of-the-art, low-impact home rowing machine that's actually designed by rowers. Sarah Frank is my colleague and works on the business side of things at Vox. She got to try out a Hydro. Here's what she thought.
While the Hydro workouts only took about 20 minutes, after I was done, I really felt like I probably had been working out for at least an hour. I could really feel the burn from my arms to my core to my legs, and it felt like I was getting a really efficient workout for my time. This spring, you can join the growing rowing community at Hydro. You can head over to hydro.com and use code WEEDS to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's HYDROW.com code WEEDS to save up to $400. Hydro.com code WEEDS.
Wise is the app that makes using different currencies easy. Need to send dollars to your cousin in Bali fast? Getting paid in another currency and don't want to lose out because of inflated exchange rates? Want travel money without having to slog through the currency exchange kiosk? Then Wise just might be your answer. From pesos to pounds, euros to yen, Wise takes the guesswork out of converting currencies. You can send and spend money worldwide at the real-time mid-market exchange rate, with no markups and no hidden fees. In 2023, people sent over $100 billion worldwide with Wise. What's more, over half of those transfers got to their destination in less time than it takes to listen to this ad. Whether you're traveling, spending money abroad, or doing business, let Wise help you manage your money in different currencies with ease. Join 16 million customers already using Wise worldwide. To learn more about how a Wise account can work for you, download the app or visit Wise.com. That's Wise, WISE.com. Wise.com.
When you normally think about, like, space military, right? I mean, I don't want to be crazy, but, like, you think about not Chinese people, but, like, you're fighting aliens. Like, is there anything?
When are we getting ion cannons? Because I think that's the only way we can get those ships off this planet.
I don't want to give short shrift to the importance of securing our you know, Google Maps against possible Chinese missiles. But like, there have been all these weird stories about like mysterious alloys and space sales and things like that. Like does the military? I mean, obviously they have their secret Area 51 lab, but
we're all storming.
Is there anything in the like overt planning here about like, I don't know, the defense of the planet?
I mean, the Pentagon, I can't speak specifically to, like, Plan 4924 is alien space defense. But there is, I believe it's Plan 9999, which is to protect Earth from a zombie apocalypse. Like, the Pentagon is ready for that.
Okay, that's good.
So I would be shocked. There's, of course, some random office somewhere in the world that's thinking about, if the aliens come, here are our first moves. I'm sure that exists. In fact, I would... You know, here I'll make it sexy. I bet you that, like, responsibility will move to the Space Force. Why wouldn't it, right? Why wouldn't the Space Force be sort of the main, as the Air Force would say, belly button of where, like, we think about that kind
of
stuff.
Wait, they say belly button?
Yeah. Secretary of the Air Force, former Secretary of the Air Force, Deborah James, who I talk to fairly regularly. That wasn't a name drop. It's just like when Space Force was still happening, I would call her and be like, "What is this? Like, what's going on?" And she was just, she was against it. I don't know if she's for it now. But at the time, she was against it, and she was just like, "Yeah, we just can't be creating new belly buttons for the Air Force." Like, wait, belly buttons? And stirring up that thing that maybe I should be fair. Maybe it's what she says, but sure. I've now believed it to be Air Force. Sorry, long diatribe. But yeah, I mean, I think alien defense will probably fall under Space Force, but I don't think we have really.
It's not the primary mission.
No, but I don't know if we have the weapons for it. Like, other than shooting ICBMs really high up, I don't think we have any.
Again. Ion cannons. How you get out of this.
So this is the bummer, is there's no spaceships in the Space Force.
Right. That's the other thing. It's just like, even the basics of like, what are you commanding? Because we've already...
Well, missiles, right? I mean, like, that's how the Air Force got this responsibility, because they own the missiles and you can shoot a missile. It's boring to shoot a missile from the ground into outer space.
I'm aware that this...
Physics works.
That's generally true, except in Star Wars.
And we will have space-based missiles soon.
Nice.
So here's a question that might seem very silly, but what relationship does Space Force have to NASA, the entity that does space stuff? I mean, obviously, it appears that everyone's doing space stuff except for me personally. But what relationship would, because NASA, I assume, like, that's research that is not military, but it was military. Kind
ish,
of?
Ish, yeah.
I'm making a very strange sideways expression because it kind of, but not really. So, like, what would that relationship look like?
So we already have, again, Air Force Space Command and all that, right? So NASA and those guys had a relationship in that. Think of it this way. The military's operations in space are there to protect what NASA wants to do. They want to make space a safe place to go and explore and fix things. And, you know, be able to go to the International Space Station, not worried about being shot down by something. So the relationship will stay the same. Now, do they share expertise on like, hey, we found this new calculation and that might be helpful, or, you know, here's where our stuff is going to be set when you go. I mean, that relationship will always exist, but I don't think it will be too nasty in the sense that like NASA's not going to go like, wait a minute, are you stepping on our toes here with the Space Force? Like, what's going on? Like, I don't expect that to happen. There was a little bit of that with Air Force Space Command, and there's a little bit of that with the Air Force sort of naturally.
Yeah.
But it's a fairly friendly relationship at the end of the day.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Alex Ward. I wanted to say, you know, you may have been noticing, if you've been listening to Bleeds, we've been sort of changing up the format of the Friday show, doing a lot of one-on-one interviews with experts. I think that sort of experiment has been going well. You can expect to see more of that in the future. And, you know, please let me know, matt@vox.com, if you've got, you know, suggestions for other kinds of topics, other people you'd be interested in hearing from. So with that, you know, it's a great space week. Check out Future Perfect. Check out Primetime. Thanks, as always, to all of our listeners, our sponsors, to our producer, Jeffrey Geld. Also, thank you to Worldly producer, Bird Pinkerton. And the Weeds will be back on Friday.